I'm going to give you a little bonus miniature sermon to start with. You should not be using the phrase, "Let's go, Brandon." If you do not know what the phrase, "Let's go, Brandon," is, then you should not be using it, because it's a new phrase that's being used for things and you don't know what it means. Don't say things you don't know what mean. If you do know what it means, then you know why you shouldn't be using it. And yes, I've heard Christians say it. Yes, I've seen Christians post it on Facebook. Don't do it. Sermon number one, done. Welcome, everyone. I'm glad that all y'all could be out this morning. It's great to be together. We really aren't together enough. I was thinking about that the other day. I miss some of our in-home singings and things like that. We got to get back to that stuff. It's really helpful. So the thing that got me thinking about this sermon here was the great Google algorithms suggested a video for me on YouTube. And it was a video of a comedian that I like, and he was being interviewed. And so it's interesting to me to see people that I like that are performers, comedians, actors, whatever in the world, to be interviewed and see their perception of their craft. And it turned out that the interviewers were also comedians, and they were rather profane people. And they thought that it would be funny to have him watch a video of teens at a conservative church telling preacher jokes, and then they could mock them. And they thought that would be a fun thing to do with this fellow coming in. And don't get me wrong, these were awful, awful jokes. I mean, horrible, mockable jokes. Like, how do we know there were cars in the Bible? Because Jesus was a carpenter. Like, that bad of a joke. And so, rather than seeing it as a mockable moment, the comedian who had grown up in a conservative church, which is why they were having him do this, he saw it as something to be pitied, a concerning thing that had actually driven him to find another group to worship with. And so I wanted to take a second to look at what he said, and it was an interview style, so I've paraphrased it, gotten rid of what the interviewer said, you know, tried to narrow it down. But listen to what he said. It breaks my heart to think that there is Christian music, that there's Christian comedy, because as somebody that used to be in that world, it hurts me that we're not with it. We're saying, we're not feeling what everyone else is feeling. But this guy, and he was pointing to the screen where they hadn't even started the video yet, the screen of the person on there. He goes, this guy has the same complex emotions as anyone. But there's a burden to my people, and I still consider them my people. There's a burden to my people that you're not allowed to express yourself. You're not allowed to express all of yourself, your doubts. You're not allowed to express your anger. You're not allowed to express your ugliness. You know what I'm saying? Your greed, your jealousy. You always have to put on a face. And that is not the message of Christ. Authenticity and realness and truth and light is the point. So when I see us going and trying to represent holiness, like, I think that if you are holy, like, if you've truly connected with God, the infinite consciousness that created everything, you've truly connected, if you can get into that sense of oneness with God, then chances are you probably are pretty equanimous, calm, composed, gentle, nice, not very lustful, not the kind of guy that goes and has 12 beers at night. You know what I mean? But that comes after the inner transformation. My people, and I used to do this, go, oh, I see the fruits of the inner transformation in that person or that person. and I'll pretend that I have it because I want to be in the group. But it's the cart before the horse. And I sympathize. I'm not saying Christians are a bunch of phony holy people. I'm saying that when I was in that church, I felt it and I saw the need to do it. Because there wasn't land, there wasn't freedom, there wasn't room for your doubt, for your ugliness. They might say, your doubts are welcome. No, they're not. And neither is my alcoholism or my struggle with drugs or my wrath or any weakness. It's not. You know, back when they had Christian conferences, before the internet and all that, there would be stories about all the wild things that would happen at the Christian conferences, be they Church of Christ, Baptist, whatever they might be. There would be parties. There would be people that ended up being drunk. The pay-per-view rates at the hotels would go up that week. And why? Because this very, I think, juicy, exciting, electric, alive idea that Jesus was representing got turned into a list of don'ts. And you know what happens when you do that? People go wild when they have a weekend away. Because it's just a list. It's not a mindset. It's lousy that we've lost that narrative. So anyway, when we say there's Christian comedy, it breaks my heart because I think there are many mainstream comics that are doing comedy that is true and therefore Christ-like. And on the side of truth. Saying this is what it's like to be human. And it heals us and it gives us solidarity and it makes us feel less alone. And that's so much better than going up and being like, Joshua, son of Nun, I thought only Adam and Eve had no parents. Who are you helping with that joke? What are you trying to accomplish? So then they watch some of the horrible jokes. Things like, why did God have to discipline the chickens on the ark because of their foul language? You know. And he continued, what are we saying about a faith for grown, intellectual, interesting people when the jokes we can appreciate are baby jokes? Have you read the book of Job, the Bible, and seen the complexity and the violence and the sex and the betrayal and the doubt and the shame and the fear? And that people were actually drawn to Jesus? You know, Jesus drew a crowd. It'd be almost like hanging out with a celebrity today. Jesus drew a crowd, and if you were with him, you'd see people came to listen to him. People crossed distances to listen to him. It wasn't because he was saying, oh, those chickens have foul language. It was because he had something real. Something valuable. You understand? Do you think you can draw an impromptu crowd? Back in the day, when people had to walk miles to get anywhere, and there were magicians and other orders, but people wanted to listen to Jesus. And the kids telling these jokes, they have their real lives, and they go to school, and they tell jokes with their friends, and they have an actual authentic experience. And the fact that their authentic experiences in their life are something separate from their time at church, and they aren't able to feel authentic at church, is sad. And I do want to say, I understand you can't just tell any joke in a sermon. That doesn't work. I understand that. I'm not an idiot. But even as a sheltered person, when you say, we'll create the appearance of holiness by withholding them from everything, when really the way out is through, true holiness is going through the trials and coming out the other side with compassion and love. So that's what he said. What do you think about that? You know, a lot of times from the pulpit, we'll talk about the world looks at it this way, but Christians need to look at it that way. Or the denominations do this, but we do that. And sometimes you'll get a more forward preacher. You'll get a Dennis Scroggins, right? And he'll be like, there are people in the church right now. But even then, a lot of times it's caveated. I'm not saying this congregation, but in the... And it's like, well, when are we going to look at this congregation? We're looking at a whole lot of other people. Because that's how you grow. And we need to be a place to grow, right? We need to work on ourselves also. So we need to think about ourselves, how we can be more Christ-like. What this guy's talking about here applies to this congregation. I've seen it. I've seen people in classes try to bring up doubts and get shut down. Now, you might say to yourself, well, that makes us sound mean. No, the point's not meanness. The point's actually love. The people that shut that down were doing it out of love. They were worried that expressing and exploring those doubts and trying to help that person with those doubts might actually grow doubts in other people. And so they didn't want to do it in the group. And I understand the concept, but that's not what Jesus did. Jesus addressed things in front of everyone. And there's reasons for that. I heard somebody one time in class say, what do you do when you feel doubt? Or what should, I think they said, what should someone do when they feel doubt? Right? They phrased it like it wasn't them, but you could hear in their tone of voice it was them. Well, that's terrifying. That's where you go, well, I don't care about our lesson anymore. We need to deal with this. The answer they got then was, well, you need to pray, you need to study. And then it was quickly moved to another topic. It's a bit dangerous to have statements like Christians don't do fill in the blank. Because then someone in the audience who does still have a problem with that feels very isolated. And it's hard to help them grow because they don't feel comfortable to even discuss it. Because Christians as a group do everything everyone does. We have the same spectrum of weaknesses, right? You can't say Christians don't do that. There's some Christian out there that does it. Christians shouldn't do it. And by expressing that Christians shouldn't do it, but some Christians do it, or even admitting in classes things you've done in the past, gives an opportunity for someone that's struggling with it now to go, I can go talk to Aaron, or I can go talk to Patsy, or I can go talk to whoever. They just said they used to do that thing that I have a problem with. But really, and this is hard, really we should create an environment where the person feels comfortable just bringing it up in a more public setting. And that's hard. Not everyone will. But it gives opportunity for people that maybe have experienced that or have helped other people that have had those weaknesses a chance to know where a place is that they can help. So think about what Jesus said. He said, I did not come to call the righteous, but sinners. Now listen to this. Listen to this. Because this is another hard thing, and it's going to sound wrong at first. If we don't allow unrighteousness in our midst, then that is exactly what we will have. And what I mean by that is that if we don't allow people to discuss their trials and their weaknesses and their failures and their stumbling, then it'll just be hidden. And it'll still be there. Why did he say that? What was he saying? The people who are well have no need of a physician, right? It's the sick who need the physician. But if we hide the disease, then the physician doesn't know about it. It's not accessible for the physicians to work on. We're all physicians. We're all here to help one another. And we have the great physician we can lean on in doing it. But if it's a cancer under the surface, and it's stage 4 or 5 before we know about it, it's too late. The infection will grow. It'll be in the church. The infection will grow, and the church will have difficulty, if not inability, to grow. We need to heal the infection so we can grow in the Lord. And Jesus encouraged speaking openly about it. He never reprimanded anyone that spoke openly about issues they had or where they were. He never reprimanded them. He invited it. You know, when Jesus was talking, this guy came up. His son had been afflicted for ages. And he said, "Please have compassion. Help my son." He said to Jesus, "If you can," right? "If you can." And Jesus said, "It's not if I can, it's if you can. If you can believe, then all things are possible." And the guy said, "I do believe. Help my unbelief. I do believe, help my unbelief." And Jesus accepted that. Jesus accepted him. Jesus helped his son. The man admitted that his faith was not as complete as it should be. He was not there yet. Meanwhile, Jesus condemned the Pharisees for shunning sinners, for they themselves only being outwardly holy, inwardly infected, unwell, unhealing. What does that mean? The whitewashed sepulchers and all that. They were hiding themselves. They were not given any opportunity for themselves to be healed by the group or to heal others, to grow like that. I'll pause here for a second. I'm not saying we don't do any of this. Had that happen before when I give sermons. "We do this, this, thus, and such." Great. Not to be too harsh again, but that's a teenager answer. "Jason, I told you to pick up your room." I put my shirts in the hamper. All right, I can see like 3% of your floor. That was not an argument towards the goal, right? So even if we're 50% there or 70% there, this is a place that can be improved, is what I'm saying. And even while condemning the Pharisees, he ate with some of them. Even when they, and then they complained about him not washing his hands. But he ate with some of them. And he met with Nicodemus. The point is, be it the more righteous or the less righteous, Jesus accepted them not based on their righteousness. Spoiler alert, all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, right? Jesus didn't accept them based on their righteousness. Jesus accepted them based on their willingness to be healed and their desire to grow, their love of truth. That's what they were accepted on. Some of them walked in with no truth at all, right? Some of them had part of the truth. People were at different places. But you look in Revelation, he didn't accept the church that stopped growing. It didn't matter if that church was better than the church over here. He did accept, as far as how far along the path they were, they'd stopped going along the path, and he didn't accept them anymore. And regardless where they were, he didn't have them hide who they were or where they were. He had them be open about it. So we know where we are, so we can take the next step. And we're not all in the same place, right? We're all in different places. We need to know where we are. If I don't know where you are, I can't help you take the next step. I may try to have you step to here, and that's like 9 steps beyond where you are. You can't do that. You're going to stretch and try, and you're going to fall. That's not good. We have to know. We have to know. And when Jesus questioned people, I was saying he doesn't have them hide where they are or where they're at. When Jesus questioned people, even his disciples, even the apostles, he did it in front of other people. And Jesus knows everything, right? He knew their answers would be unflattering. But he still did it in front of everyone. And why? Well, to bring it to light. Things shouldn't be hidden. That doesn't help the body. To make them themselves realize it. A lot of times the easiest one is for you to hide it from yourself. I had somebody one time, they came forward. I say I had somebody, I was just in the audience. I don't know why I had them. Someone one time, a place I was, came forward and they said, they said that someone had reached out to them about something in their life and they realized they had a problem and that they needed to change their life. But the thing was, it had been true about them for years, maybe decades, and they'd never seen it. And someone brought it to them, and then they saw it, and they went, oh, I got to fix that. And it was one of those, everybody knows. Well, everybody but him, he didn't know. Don't let somebody hide something from themselves either. Jesus didn't. Accountability is another reason. So we can help each other. If you're sitting there, and Jesus looks at somebody, and Jesus ask them a question and it reveals a weakness about them or a failing about them or something about them that they need help with, you suddenly have an obligation to help them. Because now you know about it. Well, Justin, that's my plan. My plan is to know nothing about anyone and then I don't have to do anything. That's not a good plan. And then it's also a learning opportunity for everyone. We can learn from one another's mistakes, even from the mistakes they're actively in. And when we look at somebody like an older, wiser Christian, an elder, someone like that, we watch somebody approach a situation, we can learn how to approach that situation in the future too. If it's always back behind closed doors, no one gets to witness it and learn from it. And Jesus had some harsh things to say in these things. I mean, Jesus had some harsh things to say about the apostles. I mean, you look at how he talked about some of the apostles, about John, I mean, about Peter. Jesus had some harsh things to say about Peter, right in front of everybody. But all of that is what we have to be Christ-like. All right, we've been talking a lot about things Jesus did. I know it's another one of these sermons where I haven't said a lot of verses, but I've said a lot of verses. Trusting you'll know your Bible. But we have to be compassionate and loving and accepting like Christ was. But we also have to be open and forward and harsh like Christ was. Sometimes that's hard. It's hard. We're worried about damaging relationships. We're worried about hurting souls. We worry about bringing something up that could help people because it might hurt people. That's akin to the thing where it's like, well, I don't want to go and tell the gospel to this person because I might do it wrong and then they'll never be receptive again. You can't live like that. You got to spread the gospel. You got to trust God. You got to trust the word. Because being paralyzed or worse, hiding things is guaranteed to cause harm. I don't know. That brings to mind the parable of the talents, right? You think about the guy that got reprimanded for being scared and for hiding. Because that's the point of the church. That's the point of the family. I need your help. Dennis needs your help. Rachel needs your help. You need everyone else's help. You aren't allowed to stop growing. And it's hard to grow all by yourself. And it's hard to grow when you're not making yourself available. We can't fulfill the command to bear one another's burdens if we don't know what the burdens are. To fulfill the command to spur one another to good works, we have to know what's inhibiting each other from good works. To clear those, so we can drive on to good works. We can't fulfill the command to grow if we don't heal that which is preventing us from growing, and we can't heal what we don't discuss. So think about what Paul says when he says to the Colossians, "Do not lie to one another, since you laid aside the old self with its evil practices and have put on the new self." That passage is often used to talk about how we're a completely different person after we come to Christ, after we're baptized, right? But people aren't light switches. It's not an instantaneous, complete transformation. Even in this passage, he's telling them not to lie. They had already been baptized. They were still lying to one another. The point is that they weren't a completely new person at that point. They were on a completely new path to being a new person. And they should, right? It's the should versus the do. They should not be lying, but they were. They should be this completely new person, light switch, but they weren't, right? So, they were on a completely new path, and they needed to discard anything inhibiting them from heading down that path. But they were lying. They weren't honest and open. They were lying to each other. And then he said, the new you is being renewed. It's a process. It's being renewed, right? It's a process. So to finish up here, let's go ahead and finish off this passage. It says, do not lie to one another, since you laid aside the old self with its evil practices, but put on the new self, who is being renewed to a true knowledge according to the image of the one who created him. A renewal in which there is no distinction, but Christ is all and end all. So as those who have been chosen of God, holy and beloved, put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience, bearing with one another, and forgiving each other. Whoever has a complaint against anyone, just as the Lord forgave you, so also should you. Beyond all these things, put on love, which is the perfect bond of unity. Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which indeed you were called in one body, and be thankful. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly with all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, singing with thankfulness in your hearts to God. And whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks through him to God the Father. We should be open and honest. We should be a place to grow. We should be so open and honest that when people come in, they immediately know, this is a place I can bear my soul. This is a place I can grow. So if you need help of any kind, then take it to someone. Talk about it. Or bring it up with a group. Or come up here and chat with me right now while we stand and sing.